The Guardian.
I've just returned from Bangladesh. It's one of the most vulnerable countries in the world. As far as climate change goes, how serious is the problem there, please?
Well, the problem, as you just mentioned, that Bangladesh is one of the most vulnerable countries, and the problem is serious, as was witnessed during the last year. We had a severe flood, in fact, followed by a smaller flood, and then a very severe cyclonic storm, Sidr, affecting Bangladesh within a span of really 3 months. Because of the geographical and geomorphological conditions of Bangladesh, we are particularly vulnerable. Vulnerable because we are a country with a very large low-lying coastal belt, on the one hand, and on the other, the two of the largest rivers, river systems of the world, the Ganges and the Brahmaputra, drain out their waters into the Bay of Bengal through Bangladesh. So whenever there is an accelerated meltdown of snow in the Himalayas or increased rainfall in the upper reaches, there is flooding in Bangladesh. And as you just also said, if the sea level rises by even 1 meter or even half a meter, a large tract of Bangladesh will go underwater, and large numbers of people will lose their homes and livelihoods.
You talked at the UN late last year about the potential cataclysmic problem of climate change. Have you quantified in any way the effect on people?
It's difficult to quantify, but there have been quantifications of the impacts of flood and Sidr in terms of really economic loss. But when one talks about human suffering, it's very difficult to quantify. When people who are living at the margin lose their homes and livelihoods, I don't think any quantification will be able to really bring up the problems that they face through climate change and are going to face more in future. So, yes, there is some quantification in terms of numbers of economic loss suffered by Bangladesh during floods, etc. But the human suffering is something which goes beyond.
You're a former World Bank man. I mean, in terms of money, I mean, what does it mean for the economy? Is it the end of the economy of Bangladesh?
It's not the end of the economy, but obviously, if you think of crop losses alone, I think we lost close to almost 1.5 million tons of food grains during the floods and the Sidr. But as I said, at the margin, the impact is much larger because at that extent, we had to go and import food from abroad. And look at the food prices abroad. You know, they have gone up not because of anything that happened in Bangladesh, but we are paying a price out of it. So obviously, that's a quantification in terms of the price increase, in terms of the agricultural loss, in terms of housing losses. There are quantifications. When I spoke in September, Sidr hadn't yet really visited Bangladesh. So when you talk about cataclysm, I didn't know. But I witnessed it within a couple of months, what happened.
Was Sidr linked to climate change at the time in Bangladesh?
Well, I mean, you see, because both Sidr and the floods really hit us within a short time span, so it seems to me that, yes, there is some link between climate change and the Sidr and the cyclonic storm. Now, obviously, when it is going to hit us is something nobody probably can predict into the future. But any such storm or flood, you know, can put a large number of people into the trap of poverty.
We saw your chief meteorologist, and he said that the intensity of cyclones in Bangladesh in the last 20 years has increased by at least 10%.
It is. That is very true. That's also, as you say, it's meteorological data, as you just pointed out. And the Sidr itself, I think, in terms of not just intensity, in terms of the size, it was huge. The size was almost as big. I mean, the radius was such that it was as big as Bangladesh itself. So that way it is different from the earlier cyclonic storms, which were much more concentrated in terms of the area that the storms affected. So that's again something we saw very different from our earlier cyclonic storms.
Climate change seems to be the most unfair of all phenomena in the world, especially for Bangladesh, which is one of the poorer countries and is the least able to cope with it.
Well, this is very true because, in a sense, the climate change is being sort of, in a sense, you can say, thrust up in the world because of the high rates of emissions in the past, right? I mean, that's one of the major causes. Bangladesh, I think, is one of the lowest in terms of emission. So we didn't contribute at all, if I may sort of emphasize it to the extreme, to the climate change or to the carbon emission. So therefore, yes, that's, I think, an established fact that the countries like Bangladesh, which are least developed, are also suffering more through the climate change impact. And that is I think a question of just fact. And it is, to some extent, as you said, it is unfair because I think the fairness will dictate that the world at large really comes out with a mechanism which will ensure that climate change will be focused on the development agenda. And that development will come back the focus on the agenda. We, the developing countries in Bangladesh, are prepared to do our part in terms of choosing a path of development. But at the same time, we require and demand that we have access to a large amount of investable resources that will be needed, and also and access to the technology that will be needed and that will have to be developed, really, if we want to adapt to climate change and mitigate climate change. If I look at it in physical terms, well, the coastal embankments of Bangladesh will need to be reinforced and strengthened. River embankments will have to be strengthened. Rivers have to be trained so that river erosion doesn't take place with as much severity as it does today. At the same time, I also realize that new agricultural cropping technology will have to develop, which is resilient to flash floods or increased salinity. But all these, as I said, we can work out all these, but the resource requirements are so huge that really it has to be shared by the world at large.
But you have less than 2 years now before the world is supposedly going to make an agreement at Copenhagen. Do you think that the least developed countries, led by yourselves, are really making an impact yet on the agenda?
Well, we in Bali, we did make an impact. We are now beginning to organize ourselves, and we want to put this high on the agenda and reach an agreement really at Copenhagen in 2009, as you just said. And it's just not reaching an agreement, but I think what is important in future will be a good governance of really ensuring that the agreement is then honored and implemented and doesn't happen like what happened with the Kyoto Protocol.
But nevertheless, we don't see much progress being made. Is that inevitable? Or?
Well, I think what's happening now, I think the least developed countries, we are sort of really gathering ourselves and preparing ourselves. So Bali was a kind of a curtain raiser, the first one. And I think before we move to Poland and we move to Copenhagen, obviously, I'd like to use Bangladesh's chairmanship of LDCs to really bring ourselves up with the specific programs, really, that then we can present as part of the deal with the other countries, the developed countries particularly.
What is the mood with the other developing LDCs, the least developing countries? Surely they are angry and rather upset that they have not been helped yet in any way.
I think there's every reason to feel that way, to feel angry and upset. But at the same time, I think we have to continue the process of demanding and asking that the developed countries have a responsibility for a cleaner world, a safer world, for a development path which will really move us away from the environmental disasters that otherwise will fall on us. So obviously we have to work it out together, but as I said, the developed countries have to share that responsibility, and that is something I think increasingly we'd like to bring it up to them. And in New York, as you know, in September last year, there was a high-level meeting on climate change, which the UN Secretary General convened, and again, together with the Netherlands Prime Minister, I co-chaired a session on adaptation. Again, together, just we wanted to bring up the issues related to adaptation particularly, and what will be required if really that adaptation strategy is to succeed.
What about Britain? Can Britain help you in this case?
Well, surely it can. I think Prime Minister Gordon Brown has been a strong vocal supporter of better environment and better world in that sense. So I do hope that, yes, Britain will play, I hope, that an important role in this regard. We are now planning to have a conference in London focusing on climate change and Bangladesh. And again, that's something where I'm sure the Britain, the government, British government, can also provide assistance.
Specifically, what can Britain do?
Well, specifically, as I said, the Britain, as one of the leading developed countries, can support the development or of a fund, ultimately. That's really what will be needed, adaptation fund. Okay. And, as I said, having a governance mechanism for access to that fund. And the fund, the size of the fund, okay, it's something that really will have to be worked out. And the contributions will have to be ensured. And I'm sure Britain will have its opportunity to contribute to that, that fund. But more than that, take a lead role with other developed countries and international organizations in both, as I said, making sure the fund is set up, fund is financed, and there is an appropriate governance mechanism for accessing those funds.
Meanwhile, I mean, America and Europe don't seem to be very interested in Bangladesh. I mean, do you think that is there a message here for Bush or for a new U.S. president?
Well, you see, let me put it this way. Bangladesh today is a country of approximately 145 million people. Goldman Sachs and some other Wall Street firms have started to say that in about one decade, 1.5 decades, this country is can become really a middle-income country. So it's a huge potential in terms of just economic potential that it has. Secondly, I think we are also a country which is a democratic, a freedom-loving, a moderate country, and a country which really increasingly will play a more important role in several ways, as I said, as an economic, a forthcoming economic power, as our membership in the various parts, various organizations like the OIC and the just returning from the summit from there. There also we raised the issue of climate change and how the OIC can really bring up the issue and really help the process of adapting and mitigating climate change. So we can play a much more important role in terms of our location, in terms of the size of our population, in terms of the kind of government that we are establishing.
So, how are you going to be heard in the cacophony? There's 150 middle-income and rich countries out there, all of who want very good deals as well.
Sure, I mean, this is not a question of deal. We also are saying that reward market performance. Okay, and that's where I think we are bringing up very strongly the case of Bangladesh. I mean, take the case of our access to markets in developed countries for our exports, RMG, the case in point. RMG is not just additional exports. If you think RMG employs 2 million women, it's women empowerment. and it's inclusive development. Mm. So this is all really happening in Bangladesh.
Mm.
So therefore, really, we are not asking just for aid. We are saying you must reward market performance as well. I think we'd like to point out that Bangladesh is one of those countries which has used aid efficiently, effectively to create capacity. Right, and that capacity is being reflected in our ability to export competitively in the world.
Mm. Mm.
So we are asking and demanding that give us that opportunity.
Mm.
That's really what is being talked about in the developed countries as well, the relationship between aid and trade.
Mm.
So we can showcase that in that sense.
Have you got a specific mechanism in mind for transferring money? Or, I mean, there's various different systems. One is called contraction and convergence. In other words, that that richer countries would reduce their emissions and they would meet towards a certain point. I mean, is there a specific way which you can see becoming a breakthrough for Copenhagen?
I mean, obviously, rich countries will have to reduce their emissions.
On a capacity, on a per capita basis, do you think it should be done, or?
Well, per capita is one basis that one can work on. But obviously, ultimately, the total emission in the world has to go down, right? I mean, that's as simple as that.
Mm.
And since some countries are contributing to that much more than others, so they have to then reduce their emissions proportionately much more than really a country like Bangladesh, which really is not contributing practically anything to the emissions or the global emission.
Mm.
So that's the part of the deal that really one would really move toward.
But do you think a per capita basis is a fair basis to do it?
It's let me sort of suggest that here it's not, I've not really gone into the details of really whether it should be per capita basis or some other basis. There can be various ways of handling this, but what I would think should happen is that there must be a way of really sharing the responsibility of lowering the emissions that really countries have been putting out into the atmosphere.
But when your talks with Gordon Brown, what are you specifically going to be talking about?
Well, obviously, climate change will be one of the issues, but I'll see that this is part of a broader development agenda, really. And again, the whole issue of trade and aid will be another issue, I think, that I'd like him to understand and really to, in a sense, take a leadership role in the developed countries. And obviously, I think he has been talking about even an environment bank, environment fund. So obviously, that's something where our interests will be common. So there'll be several issues that really, on the global area or arena, that will be there today.
Are you pushing for a global environment bank?
I'm not pushing for a global environment bank per se, but obviously in pushing for a global environment fund, whether one can establish this as a bank or a fund, that something really is a matter of detail.
How much do you think it needs to be capitalized by? I mean, we're talking hundreds of billions of dollars.
Yes, but I don't even hazard a guess here of how much will need to be the capital, or how much will be the capitalized.
So. But if the world came to Bangladesh and says, okay, here's some money, how much do you need to adapt to climate change? What would you say?
Well, I mean, in terms of Bangladesh, okay, what we are looking at is at least in the next 5 years or 5 to 7 years, a medium-term program, which we are trying to develop, I think will itself cost us probably more than $3.5 billion in terms of, as I said, improved infrastructure and better technology.
So just to get that right, you are, of your own income, your small income, you're putting in $3.5 billion.
No. I said we will need a program.
Ah.
And obviously that needs to be financed. That's what I sort of said after CEDAR, and I called the representatives of the international development organizations and development partners, partner countries, and said, look, we need to look at in the medium term now. We cannot just allow this thing to be forgotten, that CEDAR has just happened, so we are busy with relief and we will forget once the relief phase is over. So even reconstruction and first phase will need substantial funding. So that's really what we are working out for ourselves now, what that fund is likely to be and how our partners can really assist us in funding that.
Bangladesh is in between two very large elephants, India and China, both of whose climate emissions are rapidly increasing. Are you in talks with them at all?
Well, obviously we are in talks with them and as a part of a global, shall we say, talks. At the bilateral level, SARC summit, the question of environment, how we can put ourselves together, all the SARC countries, and face environmental problems have started to come up.
They have started.
Yes, they have started to come up. But, you know, we haven't talked about the details yet, but at least it's an issue which has been recognized by the SARC countries that we need to recognize this issue, we need to work on this, we need to collaborate.
Thank you very much indeed.
For more discussion and analysis, download Guardian Daily. That's the Guardian's news podcast, available first thing in the morning, Monday to Friday.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.